Indigenous deaths in custody will continue to be a blight on society if the corrective service system remains underfunded, an inquest has found. A coronial inquiry into the death in custody of a Wobbegal man, Michael Baker, has concluded he died alone in his cell at Lithgow Correctional Centre in the New South Wales Central Tablelands of cardiac arrhythmia. But the coroner says the understaffing of prison doctors and nurses meant the care he received fell well short of an appropriate level. He says Mr. Baker was not seen by a doctor following a short stint in hospital in the months leading up to his death. The federal and Queensland governments say they are committed to the World Heritage process for Cape York, which has been nominated for inclusion on UNESCO's list. The process to join the World Heritage list can take up to 5 years. But Queensland Premier Stephen Miles says this nomination has already been years in the making. He says they are prepared to do the work required to complete the listing alongside traditional owner groups and the Cape York community.
This is a process that we've been on for about 10 years now. I worked on this when I was the Environment Minister, and it's very special to have reached this next milestone. I want to personally thank the First Nations leaders who've worked with us on this nomination, who've come with us on this journey. This is about supporting them to protect their lands, protect their cultures.
Queensland sites already on the World Heritage List include the Great Barrier Reef, Gari, and the wet tropics in the state's northeast. A new Indigenous language program has taken flight with the Northern Territory Medical Service. The program is contained in a series of videos created by Indigenous designers Echo Whiskey, which explain patients' rights and expectations in 9 different Indigenous languages, as well as detailing how to provide feedback and complaints. CareFlight hopes they will foster better communication between First Nations patients and English-speaking staff. They estimate about 90% of its patients in rural Northern Territory are Indigenous. Residents say they are concerned about the multi-million redevelopment of a housing block that has historically provided affordable housing for Aboriginal residents in Sydney's inner city. A group of residents say they can no longer afford to live there after the construction of a $140 million multi-storey student accommodation tower to be known as the Pemulwuy Project. New affordable housing in the area, known as the Block, was to be funded by leasing out for 99 years. But CEO of the Metropolitan Local Aboriginal Land Council, Nathan Morin, has told NITV and Living Black that less than 20% of the current tenants are originally from the Block.
I think it's about a philosophical change from the housing company being founded to provide Aboriginal community housing to the realities of the housing services it provides today are more or less mainstream. I'd like to commend our community for forcing the housing company to have a component for Aboriginal students and acknowledge that it was actually the Redfern Aboriginal community who were calling for a percentage of that tenancy to be Aboriginal. In fact, openly saying why couldn't it be 100% Aboriginal student accommodation is an issue for us.
A new book outlines new details of mass killings of Aboriginal people by European settlers from 1824 until the 1980s in what became known as the Frontier Wars. For more than 20 years, as part of a truth-telling project, a team at the University of Newcastle, led by the late Professor Lyndall Ryan, has been mapping the prevalence and scale of the killings, what has become known as the Frontier Massacres. Dr. Robin Smith at Charles Darwin University says her new book adds to that work by revealing not only the perpetrators of massacres, but also their enablers, both public and private. Dr. Smith says her work shows police were not the principal perpetrators and other settlers were involved in the killings. The First Nations Awabakal community in the New South Wales Hunter region is celebrating the protection of a sacred women's cave. After 13 years of campaigning to have the Butterfly Cave saved from development, the state government has now purchased the land to turn it into a national park. Traditionally, women have been taking girls to the cave to teach history, culture and weaving. In the past, they had to seek permission to walk on the track to the cave, but now Awabakal women can go to the sacred site whenever they want. Auntie Lynn Brown, an Aboriginal role model in the community, says hearing that the site has been saved was an incredible feeling.
The announcement of saving the cave, saving the site around it was amazing. It was like our hearts were broken and they just mended it. excitement, crying, happiness. We finally done it. It took us a long time. We continued to fight and fight and fight till we, you know, got what we needed for our community and our Aboriginal people.
New South Wales Minister for Heritage and the Environment, Penny Sharp, told SBS News the victory was hard won.
This is a tribute to the tenacity of the women who've, you know, built a campaign for over 10 years and refused to take no for an answer. But I also want to acknowledge that the developers come to the party and been willing to allow the government to purchase the land and to hand it over to the National Parks and Wildlife Service.
Australia's federal court has awarded native title rights to the Cubby Cubby people, whose traditional land covers a large portion of the Sunshine Coast in southern Queensland. The landmark decision comes after the legal claim was first lodged in 2013 and recognises more than 360,000 hectares of land and water as belonging to the traditional owners. The area includes Noosa, Maroochydore and Bribie Island. In making her decision, Justice Berna Collier says she's satisfied the Cubby Cubby people have always had rights and interest in the country and should be able to take resources from the area for any purpose. The rights are non-exclusive, meaning they coexist with federal and state laws. Chief Executive of the Queensland South Native Title Services, Tim Wishart, says it's been a long journey for those involved.
It's really tough for Indigenous Australians to have to prove who they are, why they are, and the fact that they've maintained their culture to get this sort of outcome. It's really quite an unfairness of the system.
Record spending on social housing has been included in an otherwise tight New South Wales budget, but advocates say years of investment will be needed to address the urgent need. The budget includes the largest social housing investment in New South Wales state history, with the pledge to fund 8,400 social homes. 6,200 of them will be new and the rest knockdown rebuilds. Mark DeGattardi is the CEO of Community Housing Industry Association. He says the state government should be commended for taking some steps to address the housing problem, but more action will be needed.
We're seeing demand for social housing right now at about 58,000 households across New South Wales. 9,000 of those are on the priority waiting list, so they're people at imminent risk of homelessness. So you can see the crisis is huge. We have to take those first steps, and it's important to commend government for making that investment because it means we can start to get going. But we also need to look at land use, government land in particular, and also look at underutilised social housing assets.
The New South Wales government has defended its decision to introduce a payroll tax rebate for GPs at bulk billing clinics, as well as a waiver for past unpaid tax liabilities. Once the rebate is legislated, it will be given an ongoing rebate for contractor GP wages for clinics with bulk billing rates above 80% in metropolitan Sydney and above 70% in the rest of the state. Doctors have said the previous payroll tax would have made clinics unviable and forced GPs to charge patients around $20 extra per visit. Health Minister Ryan Park says they have heard the concerns of the medical community and are also confident that the measure will reduce the strain on the state's busy hospital system.
What we know in New South Wales right now is this. The pressure on our emergency departments has never been as great as it is now. The last quarter, we saw over 800,000 patients present to our emergency departments. What we cannot afford to see is any further reductions in bulk billing, and as a result, leaving people with no opportunity other than to attend their local emergency department. That's not sustainable.
New South Wales Health has estimated that a 1% decrease in bulk billing equates to around 3,000 additional emergency presentations. Victoria will become the first Australian state to raise the age of criminal responsibility to 12. Premier Jacinta Allen and Youth Justice Minister Enver Erdogan introduced the long-awaited Youth Justice Bill, which would lift the age from 10 to the State Parliament on Tuesday. Ms. Allen told reporters children under 12 should not be treated as criminals.
This is legislation that will reduce youth offending, it will increase community safety, but also, too importantly, it will provide an opportunity for young people to turn their lives around because 10 and 11-year-olds don't belong in the criminal justice system. Simply, they belong in schools and in places where they're getting support.
Children as young as 10 can be charged, convicted and imprisoned in every Australian state and territory except the Northern Territory. The NT raised the age of criminal responsibility to 12 in August, while the ACT passed legislation to raise the age to 14 by 2025, with some exceptions. The parliamentary inquiry has heard from women with lived experience of perimenopause and menopause on the need for better education and service provision. The inquiry has been hearing views from health groups, politicians and the business sector on whether there should be a legislation mandating paid leave to cover such conditions. The CEO of Menopause Friendly Australia, Grace Malloy, earlier told the inquiry menopause symptoms are driving women to early retirement. Imogen Crump is a former journalist with the BBC and ABC and now editor of a news site with the University of Melbourne. She says it took her 5 years to get a diagnosis and there needs to be better education and service provision.
It was only when the night sweats and hot flushes kicked in that my GP said the word, oh, perimenopause. And that was almost 5 years after my original symptoms presented themselves. But 5 years is 1,825 days. 1,300 of those were working days. It could and should be so much more straightforward.
A $14 million sculpture by Brisbane artist Lindy Lee has finally arrived at the National Gallery of Australia. It has taken almost a week to transport from Queensland, where Lee has been working on it for the past 4 years, to mark the 40th anniversary of the National Gallery of Australia. The price tag makes it the single biggest ever investment in an artwork by the gallery. Nick Mitsovich, the gallery's director, says the hope is the installation, designed to last at least 500 years, will become a icon when it is viewable by the public from October. Ms. Lee says the work is designed to be timeless.
The work's called the Ouroboros. The word is actually means the snake that swallows its own tail. So it's constantly eating its own tail. So it's a symbol of birth and death and constant beginnings and constant renewals. I grew up during a time when Australia was still going through the White Australia policies. You know, I'm a little bit scarred by that, being a Chinese person. So the work I want to make needs to be inclusive and respect and treasure all people.
The Indigenous Literacy Foundation is celebrating the delivery of 500,000 books by Australia Post. The milestone book was posted from Sydney to the town of Cunnamulla in Queensland Southwest. The Indigenous Literacy Foundation provides books to First Nations children to encourage reading, with many written in language. The 500,000th book to be sent out by Australia Post is called Molly Bin Git Stack, or Molly Gets Stuck. Written in Creole and English, the story is about a pig that gets trapped under a van on a hot day. The CEO of the Australia Post Group, Paul Graham, says it's an important moment to pause and reflect on what has been achieved.
Well, ALF is one of our core partners, and literacy, and particularly literacy for children, is really important to Australia Post. We are connected to every single community, so we can reach out to those communities using our fantastic distribution channel to distribute things like books, which are so critical to particularly kids and young kids, not only learning how to read, but also learning about their own culture.
And that is NITV Radio's News Wrap of the Week.
Your community, your conversation. NITV Radio.